The prolonged and tumultuous argument that ended by herding us into that room eludes me, though I have a sharp physical memory that, in the course of it, my underwear kept climbing like a damp snake around my legs, and intermittent beads of sweat raced cool across my back. The notion originated with Daisy's suggestion that we hire 5 bathrooms and take cold baths, and then assumed more tangible form as a place to have a mint julep. Each of us said over and over that it was a crazy idea. We all talked at once to a baffled clerk and thought, or pretended to think, that we were being very funny. The room was large and stifling, and though it was already 4 o'clock, opening the windows admitted only a gust of hot shrubbery from the park. Daisy went to the mirror and stood with her back to us, fixing her hair. "It's a swell suite," whispered Jordan respectfully, and everyone laughed. "Open another window," commanded Daisy, without turning around. "There aren't any more." "Well, we'd better telephone for an axe." "The thing to do is to forget about the heat," said Tom impatiently. "You make it 10 times worse by crabbing about it." He unrolled a bottle of whiskey from the towel and put it on the table. "Why not let her alone, old sport?" remarked Gatsby. "You're the one that wanted to come down." There was a moment of silence. The telephone book slipped from its nail and splashed to the floor, whereupon Jordan whispered, "Excuse me," but this time no one laughed. "I'll pick it up," I offered. "I've got it," Gatsby examined the parted string, muttered, "Hmm," in an interested way, and tossed the book on a chair. "That's a great expression of yours, isn't it?" said Tom sharply. "What is it?" "All this old sport business. Where do you pick that up?"
"Now see here, Tom," said Daisy, turning around from the mirror. "If you're going to make personal remarks, I won't stay here a minute. Call up and order some ice for the mint julep."
As Tom took up the receiver, the compressed heat exploded into sound, and we were listening to the portentous chords of Mendelssohn's Wedding March from the ballroom below. "Imagine marrying anybody in this heat," cried Jordan dismally.
"Still, I was married in the middle of June," Daisy remembered. "Louisville in June. Somebody fainted. Who was it fainted, Tom?"
"Biloxi," he answered shortly.
"A man named Biloxi. Blocks Biloxi. And he made boxes. That's a fact. And he was from Biloxi, Tennessee."
"They carried him into my house," appended Jordan, "because we lived just 2 doors from the church. And he stayed 3 weeks until Daddy told him he had to get out. The day after he left, Daddy died." After a moment, she added, as if she might have sounded irreverent, "There wasn't any connection." "I used to know a Bill Biloxi from Memphis," I remarked.
"That was his cousin. I knew his whole family history before he left. He gave me an aluminum putter that I use today."
The music had died down as the ceremony began, and now a long cheer floated in at the window, followed by intermittent cries of "Yay, yay, yay," and finally by a burst of jazz as the dancing began.
"We are getting old," said Daisy. "If we are young, we'd rise and dance."
"Remember Biloxi?" Jordan warned her. "Where do you know him, Tom?"
"Biloxi?" He concentrated with an effort. "I didn't know him. He was a friend of Daisy's."
"He was not," she denied.
"I'd never seen him before. He came down in the private car."
"Well, he said he knew you. He said he was raised in Louisville. Asa Bird brought him around at the last minute and asked if we had room for him."
Jordan smiled. "He was probably bumming his way home. He told me he was president of your class at Yale."
Tom and I looked at each other blankly.
"Biloxi?
First place, we didn't have any president." Gatsby's foot beat a short, restless tattoo, and Tom eyed him suddenly.
"By the way, Mr. Gatsby, I understand you are an Oxford man."
"Not exactly."
"Oh, yes, I understand you went to Oxford."
"Yes, I went there."
A pause. Then Tom's voice, incredulous and insulting. "You must have gone there about the time Biloxi went to New Haven."
Another pause. A waiter knocked and came in with crushed mint and ice, but the silence was unbroken by his "thank you" and the soft closing of the door. This tremendous detail was to be cleared up at last.
"I told you I went there," said Gatsby.
"I heard you, but I'd like to know when."
"It was in 1919. I only stayed 5 months. That's why I can't really call myself an Oxford man." Tom glanced around to see if we mirrored his unbelief. But we were all looking at Gatsby. "It was an opportunity they gave to some of the officers after the armistice," he continued. "We could go to any of the universities in England or France." I wanted to get up and slap him on the back. I had one of those renewals of complete faith in him that I had experienced before. Daisy rose, smiling faintly, and went to the table. "Open the whiskey, Tom," she ordered, "and I'll make you a mint julep. Then you won't seem so stupid to yourself. Look at the mint." "Wait a minute," snapped Tom. "I want to ask Mr. Gatsby one more question."
"Go on," Gatsby said politely.
"What kind of a row are you trying to cause in my house anyhow?" They were out in the open at last, and Gatsby was content.
"He isn't causing a row," Daisy looked desperately from one to the other.
"You are causing a row. Please have a little self-control."
"Self-control?" repeated Tom incredulously. "I suppose the latest thing is to sit back and let Mr. Nobody from nowhere make love to your wife. Well, if that's the idea, you can count me out. Nowadays, people begin by sneering at family life and family institutions, and next they'll throw everything overboard and have intermarriage between black and white."
Flushed with his impassioned gibberish, he saw himself standing alone on the last barrier of civilization.
"We are all white here," murmured Jordan.
"I know I'm not very popular. I don't give big parties. I suppose you've got to make your house into a pigsty in order to have any friends in the modern world."
Angry as I was, as we all were, I was tempted to laugh whenever he opened his mouth. The transition from libertine to prig was so complete.
"I've got something to tell you, old sport," began Gatsby, but Daisy guessed at his intention.
"Please don't," she interrupted helplessly. "Please let's all go home. Why don't we all go home?"
"That's a good idea," I got up. "Come on, Tom, nobody wants a drink."
"I want to know what Mr. Gatsby has to tell me."
"Your wife doesn't love you," said Gatsby. "She's never loved you. She loves me."
"You must be crazy," exclaimed Tom automatically.
Gatsby sprang to his feet, vivid with excitement.
"She never loved you, do you hear?" he cried. "She only married you because I was poor and she was tired of waiting for me. It was a terrible mistake, but in her heart she never loved anyone except me."
At this point, Jordan and I tried to go, but Tom and Gatsby insisted with competitive firmness that we remain, as though neither of them had anything to conceal, and it would be a privilege to partake vicariously of their emotions.
"Sit down, Daisy." Tom's voice groped unsuccessfully for the paternal tone. "What's been going on? I want to hear all about it."
"I told you what's been going on," said Gatsby. "Going on for 5 years, and you didn't know."
Tom turned to Daisy sharply.
"You've been seeing this fellow for 5 years?"
"Not seeing," said Gatsby. "No, we couldn't meet. But both of us loved each other all that time, old sport, and you didn't know. I used to laugh sometimes."
But there was no laughter in his eyes. "To think that you didn't know."
"Oh, that's all."
Tom tapped his thick fingers together like a clergyman and leaned back in his chair.
"You're crazy," he exploded. "I can't speak about what happened 5 years ago because I didn't know Daisy then, and I'll be damned if I see how you got within a mile of her unless you brought the groceries to the back door. But all the rest of that's a goddamned lie. Daisy loved me when she married me, and she loves me now."
"No," said Gatsby, shaking his head.
"She does, though. The trouble is that sometimes she gets foolish ideas in her head and doesn't know what she's doing."
He nodded sagely.
"And what's more, I love Daisy, too. Once in a while I go off on a spree and make a fool of myself, but I always come back, and in my heart I love her all the time."
"You are revolting," said Daisy. She turned to me, and her voice, dropping an octave lower, filled the room with thrilling scorn. "Do you know why we left Chicago? I'm surprised that they didn't treat you to the story of that little spree."
Gatsby walked over and stood beside her.
"Daisy, that's all over now," he said earnestly. "It doesn't matter any more. Just tell him the truth, that you never loved him, and it's all wiped out forever."
She looked at him blindly.
"Why? How could I love him, possibly?"
"You never loved him."
She hesitated. Her eyes fell on Jordan and me with a sort of appeal, as though she realized at last what she was doing, and as though she had never, all along, intended doing anything at all. But it was done now. It was too late.
"I never loved him," she said, with perceptible reluctance.
"Not at Capiolani?" demanded Tom suddenly.
No.
From the ballroom beneath, muffled and suffocating cores were drifting up on hot waves of air. Not that day I carried you down from the punch bowl to keep your shoes dry? There was a husky tenderness in his tone. Daisy?
Please don't.
Her voice was cold, but the rancor was gone from it. She looked at Gatsby.
There, Jay, she said,
but her hand, as she tried to light a cigarette, was trembling.